It is Saturday, the 10th of October, 2015, and this is episode 261 of Digital Outbox. Hello, welcome to a weekend edition of Digital Outbox. I'm Chris, joined by Ian. Hello, Ian.
Good evening, Chris.
I'm going to have to choose a new word other than joined. I don't like joined anymore because I'm not really joined by Ian. I'm here with you, right?
Yeah, I don't know what other words. You've thrown me.
I'm Chris, and I'm here with Ian. Hello, Ian.
Good evening, Chris.
That works. Hello. That works much better. I'm happy with that. We're going to use that from next week onwards. Tune in next week to hear the new intro. How exciting.
And that's tonight's podcast. Thanks for listening.
Google decided it's not going to be... Well, in fact, that's not true. Alphabet is officially now coming in. We talked about Alphabet a little while ago. So Alphabet's this company that Google's putting above Google. So it's just going to be the umbrella organization that Google lives within. And then other companies which... Alphabet decide to buy and which Google has previously bought are going to be brought under that umbrella. And it's chosen not to use the Don't Be Evil creed inside of their code of conduct. Still retains itself inside of Google, but the Alphabet company doesn't have it. Now, conspiracy of all conspiracies, does this mean they're going to be evil? I don't think so. They've got other lines in there which pretty much says don't do anything illegal, be nice to each other and be nice to your fellow humans, do the right thing. But they're not using Don't Be Evil.
No, it is do the right thing. And unfortunately, the racist bit of me just thought that was a black guy saying it. Do the right thing! But anyway, that's just me.
Where did that come from?
I don't know. As soon as I read it last week, I was like, it's just what it was like to do the Daily Mail. It's just...
Yeah, you've been reading far too many Daily Mail stories. That's what it is. But yeah, I mean, that, yes. So it's ominously not there, but it's obviously... I think... It's almost like it's been the bane of their existence, right, Google? Every time something comes out which sounds like they've been doing something dodgy, as soon as someone chooses to decide what they're doing is dodgy, even when they do things that are dodgy, everyone goes, well, you said don't be evil.
Yeah.
So now they're just saying, do the right thing.
And do the right thing. And afterwards they say, follow the law, act honourably, treat each other with respect, but do the right thing.
And if all companies did that, it'd be great,
exactly,
right?
But sometimes do the right thing means actually doing things that aren't great for the public, but is really great for the shareholder and the company. And that's what has to be done.
Yes, it's suitably generic, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's suitably generic. Yes, so there you go. So it's Google still retain that. And most people who work for Alphabet will be working for Google, certainly to begin with, so... Really no difference there. There we go. Google AMP, that's Accelerated Mobile Pages, the technology. They're trying to counter the threat of ad blocking by offering this service to make sure that mobile pages arrive instantly, no matter where you are around the world. They're offering this platform to... their argument being that one of the reasons ad blockers have taken such a massive leap forward recently is because... of the speed of service, because ad and web platforms haven't reacted quick enough to the fact that everyone accesses via mobile now. So they reckon that AMP is a way of delivering content instantaneously without the need for people to get frustrated by the adverts that are perceived to be blocking.
Yes. Well succinctly put.
Oh, there you go. We're going to rock through this podcast, it seems. Whether it works or not, I mean, it still doesn't... You know, even if they get this thing delivering pages instantaneously, not necessarily going to stop the ad blockers blocking it, right? So it's like it's a battle now.
Yeah, and we saw it first with Facebook's instant pages. Apple's obviously got its news and it's doing its stuff with ad blockers. We've seen, was it Google and Twitter were going to team up with something? I don't know if this is the same. And we've now got AMP. And certainly there's a site you can try. So you can try it on iOS or Android. And the content does load very quickly, and it's doing sort of preloading as well. So you view it through a carousel. So some people called it almost like a Flipboard view of live news. So rather than going into Flipboard, which is a separate app, you're just getting this in Google Search. You can swipe through the articles. They are loading very quickly.
And I have to say, from both my phone and my iPad are what would be considered old technology now. And it is so noticeable when it's got low memory on both, and it's so noticeable when you visit a site that's not been optimized. It does become a pain in the backside browsing, and it becomes frustrating, and then the apps crash because it runs out of memory, all those kind of things. So I think this technology is good, and I think it would postpone my use of ad blockers to achieve the same kind of aim. But even then, I think there's still web people who have not optimized their web platform for mobile delivery. Basically, they're still living 5 years ago, which is understandable, because once you've built these massive infrastructures, it's hard to get them working on mobile.
Yes, and for a lot of these companies, ads are what keeps it free, you know, or keeps them alive. I mean, at the end of the day, that's I don't know. It's a really hard discussion, because you get so many people, you know, sort of, you know, journalists and media people saying, you know, newspapers need to adapt. You know, it's adapt or die time. You know, and if you look at the way BuzzFeed's got massive traffic, and how they go after things, and they are, I mean, a lot of people criticize BuzzFeed for all those kind of clickbait articles. You know,
it bugs the hell out of me.
27 ways that the UK is better than America, or you know, 33 ways that, you know.
To be honest, there's no news network or website like that doesn't do it at some point or other. But they do it quite often.
I think the difference with BuzzFeed is that they're now recruiting massively. They've got a massive amount, and that some of the investigative journalism they're doing is really good. And it's almost like you have to kind of switch your head to say, this is a really good journalistic source. It's not just clickbait, you know, because at one point it was. It just looked like everything was. And I think that is changing. But I find it really hard when somebody says, you know, well, you know, it's a bit like, you know, paywalls. You know, and a lot of people say paywalls won't work. The companies just have to release their stuff for free. It's like, but you're not going to pay for journalists. Who's going to pay for that 6 months or 1 year investigation into, you know, whatever topic?
Well, the problem is that no one does pay for that anymore. That's one of the problems we've got with modern day journalism. To be honest, I don't think journalists are very good at it. Well, no, let's not get down that road, shall we? And it's not fair, but you're right. That's why
it becomes a really hard debate, because you just end up lumping everybody into the same pool. You know, it's like, here's all these journalists and here's all these media people, and I find it
100% agree. That was a sweeping statement that was not correct. I do think that some of the popularist journalism we see is purely... It doesn't feel like news anymore. But then there was a Kickstarter project for that newspaper or magazine to go and do in-depth investigations. I can't remember if that was in technology only or whether that was wider. But again, you know, we did hear about them a lot at the Kickstarter time, but then we've heard nothing since, really. I mean, you can say it's slipped off everyone's radar, because it's really not high on people's list. That's the problem.
So that was, and I don't know if you're talking about, that was a company called Matter or Read Matter, because I printed it as well, and it was an ex Guardian guy, Bobby Johnson, that was behind it. They get bought by Medium, and Medium, I mean, just this week, massive rebrand, massive investment. You can host your own domain there. It's really quick, and lots of people are, you know, it's a bit like, you know, how lots of people, instead of hosting their own WordPress, just go to WordPress.com and publish from it. Medium's become a really, you know, big platform. Okay. And again, this is the other thing that people don't like, but you're putting your content on their site. And it's like, should you not own your content? That's where I've always, and so my content's guff. You know, it's not going to win any Pulitzers. It's not going to do it. But I want to own it myself. I want it to be in my place. If I want to put something up there, I can put it up. You know, and that's the way I look at it. But it's going to become more of a challenge, because you're going to find... Yeah. You know, Google's going to really punish you if your site takes, you know, more than 3 or 4 seconds. You know, it's just going to...
Yeah, because that's one of the things on this is, obviously there's a criteria already on the Google search listings for speed of delivery, and I think they're going to be becoming more hardcore on that. And that's why they're offering this service, and they want to keep you on their platforms. And the whole reason that Apple and the others are offering, Facebook are offering this, is to keep you in their service. It's a war at the moment.
It is. It's a war.
It's a war. Twitter. It's making Jack Dorsey is going to be permanent CEO. He's been the interim CEO for a while now, hasn't he? They did do a big search around and figured they couldn't find anyone better, so they've kept with him.
I mean, he started. Twitter's a mess in some ways, because they're making money, but at the same time, Jack Dorsey started the company. It was his initial idea when they were a podcast platform to try this Twitter idea. And spawned a company, and you know, if you look at the board, it's full of ex people that have ran the company. And Jack did leave, but he was on the board, and he's now back running it. Even though they said that they wanted somebody who they were only running one company, but he is going to still run Square.
Because that was his other company that he's running, and one of the stipulations was they wanted someone who was dedicated, but actually they've not found that person.
So we'll see. Certainly from interviews and from what people say, I mean, he's a smart guy. He does have a vision of where the platform's going. Hopefully we just see a bit. The bit that frustrates me is if you look at something like the Mac client or the iPad client, it's always so far behind.
Yes, they haven't. They're always looking for the next thing rather than consolidating what they've got, kind of thing, which you can understand because they've got the massive pressure to keep growing. They've see all these other platforms that just grow and they've reached some sort of glass ceiling, I guess, and they're trying to work out how to get through it. Maybe they've just reached that saturation point for the service that they're offering, which is the stream of content that just is basically a stream of consciousness, a lot of stream of consciousness from people you really don't normal people wouldn't be interested in, but seem to get hundreds of millions of followers.
Yeah, and this is the thing. I don't think Twitter's going to see the growth that Facebook saw. Facebook has become that, it still keeps growing. Everybody's on it. Everybody shares on it. And some people just don't get Twitter. There's something that came out this week called Moments. And this is one of the things they're trying to do to make it a bit more sticky. See if you're hardcore. I like to catch up on my Twitter feeds when I fall behind. But every so often, see if I come in and there's like 800 or 900 posts. It's like, no, I'll jump into one of my lists, see what the kind of people I want to see have said, and that's it. And it means you do miss events or you do miss news. So what Moments is trying to do is saying, here's a topic or something that's happening right now, and you can follow that topic and get updates on that topic rather than having to follow people as well. It's US only at the moment. It is coming round the globe as part of a rollout. But it's another way to try and get people to find something more interesting about Twitter.
And that kind of makes sense because obviously you see a lot of times tweets get used inside of other people's news stories. So when they're talking about an issue, tweets will get pulled in. So the BBC uses them. I've seen, you know, American sites use them all over the place. They get put in line and in stream. So you sometimes see a celebrity's tweeted about a particular issue or whatever, or just a random person. And I guess this is, you know, this is a way of doing that from within Twitter. It's actually saying there's an issue. There's this trend going on. There's this news story that's hit. Here's what Twitter thinks about it. Here's what Twitter's saying about it. And I think that's clever. I haven't seen it yet. It's not available to me.
No, there was a good paragraph in the story that I've put in the notes. Internal codename for this project has been Lightning, which referred to pulling together the best of Twitter in a quick and efficient way. If you follow lots of people, the best of Twitter is lost in 1,000 posts a day. You can't get to the nuggets.
That's why I haven't really used Twitter for a while now, is that I followed X number of people and it was just like you, because I'm not hour by hour, I don't look at my Twitter feed. You fall behind and it's too much for me. It's too constant.
Yeah.
Too constant.
And the kind of follow up to that lightning look, the journalist said, I like to refer to it as glacier, because it slows everything down and gives you the ability to look around without feeling the stress of thousands of other things happening at once. And that's
pinging through you and feeling like you need to read everything that's.
And the only criticism I've seen is that people are saying it's not tailored enough to you. That the moments that are appearing in their feed, it's not like you're getting them. So just say your topics were Caterham racing, Android phones, replacement iPads. I don't know, and Apple. But what you're getting is also Taylor Swift news and something else and something else and something else. But
I guess my question would be, how do they curate and how do they limit down the content that you get? Does it mean that I only hear comment from people who have got X number of followers? And
but also, I might want to understand the latest, the latest news on the Ebola, nurse in London right now. And that's not something I follow day to day. And I would want to see that in a Twitter moment. I'd like to be able to follow that and get up-to-date news on it.
Yeah. So there you go. There's two things that I don't think is clear yet, and we haven't got it yet, so we don't know. So that's, how do you pick and choose your moments rather than being told what your moments should be, and how does the content inside those moments get curated? Does it all get pulled into one place, or do they just pick and choose from set key accounts? There you go. Interesting. People. We talked about them last week. We weren't talking about just people. We're talking about people, it's two E's. Yeah. That's how it distinguishes itself from real people. This was the social media account network that was going to be reviewing people positively and negatively, giving people a 5-star.
Ian, you're a cock. 1-star. 1-star.
So anyway, we sort of said how it hadn't gone down very well. It sounded like the worst idea ever. Well, the idea is reincarnated now. They shut down their original social feeds because they were getting too much negative coverage. And they've now decided to make it a positive only review site. So you can only thumbs up someone. And pretty much they've made themselves irrelevant. So it's one of those things, isn't it? The whole idea, which is actually an idea, is ugly, horrible, should not be there. But as soon as they've now chopped it down into just the positivity side of things, it becomes pointless, irrelevant, and nothing.
They should either stuck to their guns or just no. But yeah. I
probably would have had more respect for them sticking to their guns and then seeing them go down under the lawsuit that was going to land on their face.
The bizarre thing, this came out on the 5th, so what, 5 days ago, and they reckoned in 7 days' time we'll have an app out, and it's like this smells so much.
They're smelling of PR people who are now riding on the wave of the PR, not really knowing what the hell they're doing. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, thankfully the real thing's not going to happen. And the sub thing you're never going to hear about again because it's irrelevant.
Maybe we should start up and do the real thing.
I think we should. I'm up for it. I want those legal fights.
I'm sure you do.
David Cameron, 1 star, boo. Safe Harbor deal. We've put this quite far down our story list, but actually I think this is potentially one of the biggest things that we should be talking about. However, it's kind of boring and it'll be about 6 years before we come out the other side of the story, so let's not spend too much time on it. But the European Court has come out and said that the safe harbor rule in data, where American companies use safe harbor rule to ship data from where Europeans sign up for it, gets taken over to the US, and then that data is available for US to have a look through, including their kind of their NSA kind of and their FBI, all those kind of people can go and have a look at your data. Now, Europe has said, well, Europeans are subject to strict data laws, and companies cannot get around those data laws simply by shipping your data to America. The safeguards should still exist. And now we're going to have a big fight as to what does that mean? How do American companies work in Europe? And does that mean they're all going to have European data centers to keep all their stuff there, and excuse me, what will that mean?
And for me, again, maybe I'm on erring on the side of being too cautious with this stuff, but I think this is good. You know, I live in Britain. I live under these certain. I expect my data to be treated a certain way. And you know, if I buy a service from an American company, I have to pay taxes here. I don't do the American tax system, so why is my data getting treated as...
Yeah, I don't have any say on American law and an American thing. I want to use these services. They're selling me these services in Europe. Why should I then have to be subject to American law? This is not going to be answered. European Court has said, no, can't do this. But they haven't. There's no real indication of how they're going to solve this problem, because data moves around in other rules, but safe harbor is one of the easiest ones. It's almost a trade agreement. Basically, it says we trust you, so you can have that data.
The really interesting part for me, so a lot of people focused on it's a disaster for Facebook, but it's really a massive amount of companies. It's not just Facebook, you know, it's all the big tech companies, plus a lot of the small ones as well, plus NSA, US government. But this is all thanks to...
Anywhere that collects user data and has companies in more than one region. It's massive.
This is all really stemmed from one guy. So there's a guy, an Austrian privacy campaigner, Max Schrems, who I think it was back in 2012. And I remember covering the podcast, he had asked for his data and he got, I think, was it 1,200 pages through or something? Yeah, 12, I forgot it further down. 2010, he demanded Facebook send all the user data it stored about him, and they sent 1,200 pages of documentation to him. And he's continued this. So this was basically a legal challenge from him, and Europe have found in his favour. And I'm sure there's going to be a whole load of challenges and more challenges.
Of course, like I say, it's going to be 6 years at least before it's going to be like the patent laws. It's just going to go on forever and ever, because this is another one of those. It's a bit like when, you know, the rules say you can't have encryption. Well, that has such wide and far reaching consequences that you've got to either limit it down, or there's got to be argument as to whether that's really what the judge meant. And did he realize the implications? The same thing here. Are the implications really meant? But nevertheless, in this particular case, it seems quite obvious, you know, You can't just go take data from one place, put it in another place, and then do with it as you see fit. As they say, Europe has stronger privacy laws than America.
Mm.
Log Me In has bought LastPass for $110 million. It's funny how perception go. I mean, I guess because I've seen LastPass more recently, but I assumed that LastPass was bigger than Log Me In, but apparently not. And also the other, before we talk about actually what it means, how do they decide the price of these companies?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't get it.
I don't know.
Like 110 million in the modern day world seems like, oh, it's a bargain.
I know. When you look at, and I guess it's a lot of it.
And then suddenly these weird little things get bought for a billion.
Yeah.
Like what?
And I guess it's all about, you know, potential, you know, patents,
yeah,
customer base, and is it going to grow? I think LogMeIn's got a lot of, you know, enterprise deals.
I think that's why they're big. LogMeIn was I remember they advertised on TV for a little while over here.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, and it was the service where you could go and log into your PC from anywhere around the world, and they launched a consumer product, but I think it caught on in corporate world wider as this really simple way of doing it. And LastPass being, that kind of, in I guess, user data, secure access, all those kind of things, I think they decided it was a good match for them.
Yes. Yeah. And I mean, the user feedback or user reaction hasn't been great. You know, lots of LastPass customers are like, oh, you know, I was happy with this independent LastPass. I'm not happy sitting in amongst, you know, Log Me In. And just concerned about what this now means for the future.
Yeah, I mean, one of LastPass's features was always that the password was only ever stored at your end, not I think at the central. I can't remember how exactly they protected it all, but is that all going to change now? What's going to happen? Who is this company? Thing is, they've been around. They may join me. I've certainly used Join Me as a service. That's an online meeting service, and they've got a number of other companies as well that they've been working on and services. So they're clearly bigger and more involved than I give them credit for. But there you go. If you're a LastPass user, I guess you're going to be interested to see how that story pans out. Porsche is, in fact, there's the next. We should caveat the next two stories because if you believe Twitter and the tech sites and certain aghast people, these things were the most important stories this whole fact. It's been about a week and a bit.
If you only read the tech news on the 6th of October, you'll believe this story.
Like the world had ended. Porsche turned down Google for their cars, I can't remember what Google Car. Basically, they've chosen Apple CarPlay because Google's Android Auto. Oh goodness me, I can't say these words. Asked for too much information, according to the news stories.
No, the too much information did seem very invasive. Vehicle speed, throttle position, fluid temperatures, engine revs, and that was all going to get sent back to Google. Now, considering Google's making a car, that sounds quite a lot of information to be sending back about all these different makes and models of cars, and Apple doesn't ask for any of that. So on the face of it, it looked a shocker. And of course,
only if you're worried about that information being collected centrally somewhere.
Yeah, and lots of people are with Google because Google's evil, and it collects all this information about me. And they're going to, you know, that's how they can offer all these free products, which are really rubbish anyway. But you know, they're evil. And the best bit was loads of people published this story. Loads of people retweeted it. Loads of people put it all around everywhere. Nobody actually phoned Google and said, "This is true."
No one checked.
So well done, journalists, because Google denied it. And then the next day...
Hang on. Have we phoned Google or Porsche about this story?
Hang on. Are you a journalist? Yeah, anyway.
No, not, but we're still regurgitating. We're good at regurgitating.
I know, but we are about to regurgitate the up-to-date news. So the up-to-date news is that Google don't collect any of this information. And for things like Ford who are using Android Auto, they don't collect any of this information. And I should also point out that Porsche is part of the Volkswagen Group. Now, colour me suspicious, but they did not want some maybe real-world data to be sent back to Google compared to their laboratory data that they've been found to be doctoring over the last few years. I think that's a bigger story than potentially Android Auto saying, oh...
Now, our second story... Samsung have obviously eaten into Apple sales in quite a major way, and they are sabotaging iPhones.
Wow.
How are they doing this? How are they doing this? Well, Apple kindly and open-heartedly offered them some manufacturing work to manufacture a particular chip that goes into the new iPhone 6S. They also offered the same job to someone else, because basically no one manufacturer could put these things together quick enough for Apple to sell them. They sell that many that they even have to go to our Samsung to put some of these bits and bobs together for them. Anyway, so there are actually two different chips that go into iPhone 6S, and it's kind of potluck which one you get, whether you get some chip from the Samsung manufacturing plant or the one that you get from another plant. Is it TCM?
TSMC.
Yeah, there we go.
And so basically, transistors are slightly different. So Samsung's is using 14,
nanometers.
Yeah.
And actually, this other company using bigger sized chipsets, basically.
I'm sure Apple are sitting there saying, "Well done, Samsung. We like everything smaller." Thank you very much.
But it turns out that according to some tech sites, the smaller chipset from Samsung can actually lead to a 2-hour reduction in your battery life, which caused consternation, outrage, despair.
To be fair, on the surface, if you lost 2 hours on an iPhone 6S, whereas most of the reviews have said, fantastic phone, but the battery life is the same, if not, slightly worse, which is a bit disappointing, because people are having to charge through the day, not getting a good day's usage out of it. So if you by random luck,
if I got something that was worse than something else, I'd want to get the something that
especially,
was better.
Especially 2 hours. Two hours is a big time. Difference when you're and I think what they were talking about is one did 8 hours and one did six.
And that's massive. And what was the news story isn't that there isn't a difference either. The news story is that Apple kind of said, actually, there is a difference, but it kind of equates to 5 minutes in real world usage.
So what Apple have come out and said is that, yes, there's a difference. However, the tests that these sites were doing were very specific to burn down the battery quickly, and it's exaggerated the difference. Real world usage of people doing mixed things, listening to music, taking a call, sending a text, doing all the different things, is 2 to 5 minutes.
I still think that, that could be Apple cover up as well. Because they don't want half of their product coming back and saying we want the other one. And of course, everyone, if you go and find that you've got the more dodgy one, you're going to want to replace it.
I think it's up there with you're holding it wrong. And lots of people get lots of stories out about it. But in the grand scheme.
Yeah. Smartphones, you have to charge, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of what you have to do. Microsoft announced quite a bit of hardware this week.
This was a good week.
Yeah, for Activity Tracker. So they've got it's basically the Microsoft Band. So they actually released the original version maybe a year ago, something like that. And this is the updated version they've announced. Looks quite nice. It's like a curved interface. Band, it costs a lot of money though, $249. These simple Fitbit type trackers have suddenly sharp in price.
They have all creeped up, which has probably been helped by Apple saying, well, here's our equivalent, and it's, it's
a watch that costs how much?
Well, I just spent 40 quid in a new orange band today, and it is honestly, it's fantastic.
So this thing has GPS in it. It has heart rate, calorie, sleep tracking, guided workouts, smart notifications. You can use it across iOS, Android, and Microsoft Windows. So it's got good coverage as well, which is great. Like I say, it's about $250. Sounds like a big investment. Although this thing looks sort of similar to a watch, and I think it does even tell the time, right?
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a wearable watch that actually is more honest about what it is, really.
I must admit, I don't know anybody that has one, but the band reviewed well, so I do think it is a good product. But I think it's a bit like, we're going to come on to it next about the Lumias. They're making good products, and there's not many people buying them. Yeah. And you could see almost the same with some of the Nexus devices that were kicking out. We've talked about last podcast that they're going to sell lots, but not.
You know what, though? They could be coming to some sort of tipping point, because Windows 10 is, a lot of people have praised it for being a lot, lot better. They're going to be embedding that everywhere. The products that they're releasing now are getting better and more exciting from a technical point of view and a sort of implementation point of view. And maybe this is, maybe they'll tip that balance back again, because we've seen Apple following Microsoft in a couple of their products recently. So who knows, maybe they're starting to hit the nail on the head, do it enough times and things swap pretty quickly, especially when they make their hardware cross-platform like this. It makes it immediately usable across all these, you know, different platforms. Great. Let's quickly touch on those Lumia then. It's been 2 years since the first one got released. This is a 5.7 device. It's got good hardware in it. It's got liquid cooling.
I don't know if that's a good thing.
I'm not sure if that's a good thing. But there you go. It's got it. It's got a decent amount of storage. You can extend it via a micro SD. It's got USB Type C, which is the standard now for mobile charging. And comes with all the kind of the latest Windows to the 10 stuff. It looks good.
I thought it looked good as well. And a bit, maybe it's a sad enterprisey bit of me, but they showed you Continuum. So Continuum is this whole idea of you can take your phone and you can connect it to a screen. So by a screen, I mean 27-inch screen, keyboard, mouse, and run Windows 10 apps on it. So,
and it's basically a micro computer.
Yeah. So the demo showed the chap firing up PowerPoint and Word, copying and pasting, using the keyboard, using the shortcuts. The phone was still running. And I was like, that is awesome, because lots of people...
And that's probably why it needs to be liquid cooled.
Yes, but at the same time, that I think it also shows the power of the chips that we're now carrying. Lots of people have said now for the last 2-3 years, especially I've seen people talking about it with the 6S Plus, which I'm kind of tempted to buy. I said that really quietly. Because I didn't buy a new iPhone this year.
Because that was your actual brain talking rather than you. Your brain suddenly took over.
Lots of people have said that kind of 6S Plus, that is like the computer in the pocket. It is so powerful with a big enough screen.
The only issue with these things is that they're not designed for cooling. And that's probably why this thing's got liquid cooling, because you need a fan. When bigger screens, bigger technology, bigger... Mobile is all about how do you tune up and tune down that chip on the fly as and when it's needed. Do I need the extra power? And you'll feel it. If you're watching a video, a high-quality video on a phone, you'll feel how hot the phone gets.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Comparison to just when you're browsing the desktop. And that's because they've got all these technologies in it. If you're suddenly running screen, desktop, and mouse, it's going to run hot.
But I still think it's a sign of where things are moving to.
Yeah.
You know, if you go back to the first iPad, and even maybe the first Retina one especially, it got really hot. And you compare it to the iPad Air 2 now, and what it's pushing and what you can do, and it doesn't get anywhere near like that.
The generic personal device with that you can hook up to any type of screen and any type of input devices is something futuristic, and it's something that we're going to see more and more and more.
And the chips. I mean, in some ways, the fact that they don't talk about specs that much, I think, helps it all, because all you know is it's like stupidly fast enough now, and the chips are so close to like a laptop from 3 years ago. And the laptops from 3 years ago, I've got it and it's running fine. My desktop's 4 years old. It runs fine. Fair enough, pushing 4K video, it starts to struggle.
That's certainly one thing tablets have done for us is they've taken it away from being just this technical spec race, and it's taken it to capability race instead, which is good.
Yeah.
It's more exciting. Surface Pro 4 also got announced, and a new Surface Pen. $899 is going to start at. And by all accounts, it looks good.
Yes.
So it's, I think it's a bit thinner, slightly bigger display. The pen's got a better, it's got a rubber. plus it's got better, more levels of sensitivity. And basically it's a massively powerful tablet.
Absolutely. And I'm trying to remember who's the guy that does these demos? Panos somebody, isn't it?
Not sure.
He winds me up greatly, incredibly. Hold on, I need to go and look him up.
Okay, while you're saying that, this is claimed to be 50% faster than the older models. It's got 1 terabyte. You can have storage of up to 1 terabyte. It starts with 16 gig of memory. It's got the latest kind of Intel 6th gen processors in it, so it's big specs going on here.
Panos Panay is the kind of the polar opposite. He's very good communicator, but the polar opposite of like Johnny Ive. He's very, very marketing direct in your face. And, you know, it's like, you know, of course we're doing that. Come on, Of course we're going to do that. Come on, yeah. Go on, feel it. Go on, what you feel it. Go on, feel
whoop,
it.
Whoop.
And but it's the device itself looks really. I mean, I use a Surface 3 for probably a 3 month period, and it was the reason I stopped using it wasn't the hardware. It was our software policies at work stopping me doing what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
So I kind of gave it to somebody else who didn't need to do what I did, and they're really good. It's a bit like, you know how you said about you don't want liquid cooling in your phone.
Mm.
The bit I don't like, you don't want fans in your tablet, and that's still the bit that rankles a bit. It's laptop esque performance, but it is. We did see some strange things with fans and power, and you know, all of a sudden, and you know, you would just be using it, and the power would just go from 3 hours to you've got an hour, you know, within half an hour, and you're like, I'm doing nothing. So. I still think there's. I still have a little bit of. But at the same time, the pen worked really well. The software worked really well. And they've got a really good platform with things like OneNote. You know, really, really some useful bits of software. And they showed you at the demo. They showed you this kind of. It was a music software running, and it looked fantastic. You know, just that integration with the pen. It looked really good, and also some really good pops in the Apple, you know, talk about how they've got a pencil. It's not even got a rubber, as you said, you know, with the whole eraser thing. I thought that was well done. But the thing that shocked me, I mean, so it starts, and I've only got American price in, but one of the chaps I worked with was about to go and buy one. Starting price in the UK is £799, but you can buy one at £1,799. Which has got 512 gig of storage and 16 gig of RAM, and you're on a high end.
They're definitely PC prices, aren't they?
But I mean, not cheap at all. And the thing that also shocked me was that everybody says about Apple and the nickel and diamond of like accessories. Like if you'd want the Thunderbolt to Ethernet thing, it's £25. Microsoft £35.
Yeah,
it is a premium product. There's no getting away from it. The keyboard again looks like they've stepped it up. You know, a lot more sensitive, bigger touchpad, and yeah. So I, as I said, I'd really like.
But we're seeing more. Yeah, but we're seeing. Say, we've seen Apple take that route down, and they've got their what was their Pro device costing? Is something around $900, isn't it?
I think it's about the same price. And there's no
starting price.
We'll see it, I guess, at the end of this month, because you'll be able to pre-order. We'll see what the actual UK prices are. I think it's going to be similar.
Yeah, well, let's wait and see. But we also heard from them the Surface Book laptop. So this is another expensive device. We're talking $1,500, so we're more than likely talking about £1,200-£1,300 at least. But this is an actual laptop. But it's kind of a laptop taking the Surface kind of concept of having a device that is a tablet but you can attach to a keyboard. But it's taking it to the ultimate extreme, which is this is a device designed to be a laptop effectively, so kind of normal laptop as you'd imagine it, but you can still detach the screen and have that as a tablet. Slightly bigger, this one, so 13.5-inch screen, high pixel densities, and the keyboard is a physical, you know, proper physical keyboard rather than one of these covers, and it comes on this kind of rounded hinge, which can, you can flip it around, you can have it, so you can flip the screen around so you can basically put the, I don't know how to describe it. You've seen them.
so for me, this
they
was...
They call it a digital clipboard, I think.
Yeah, so this for me was that this was one more thing, because everybody had been protecting, you know, the bands and the phones and the Surfaces. And this was a one more thing moment, and that they said, you know, laptop, and we've made the best laptop ever. And as you were watching the video, I looked at it and thought, you know, the screen, first of all, you had the hinge, and I'm thinking that's very over-engineered. And the screen itself... You looked at it and thought, that looks like a Surface, because it had the cooling fans, you know, gaps at the edge. But they spent 10 minutes talking about how it's the best laptop, and the performance was excellent. So they showed you it rendering 4K, it showed you it rendering games, so it's the best laptop. You know, we have made the best performing laptop out there.
And this is the first laptop they've ever made.
Yep, and it looked phenomenal. I just thought, engineering-wise, it looked like a high-end Apple product. You know, everything was machined aluminum. And
was it aluminum? Was it? Didn't they say it was magnesium?
Or maybe it was magnesium, but it was all machined from a single billet. It was all the typical Apple things. And then Showman, he says, "I want you to watch our video one last time." And he walks off, and you show the video. And I was sitting there watching it, thinking that screen does detach. Yeah. There's going to be something. And sure enough, they showed you the video again, and then the screen detached, and you've got a Surface. And I just thought that is great because Windows 10 is all about touch. The Surface is really good as a tablet. And the hinge you talked about, it means you can go, you can flip it all the way around. So you can actually, and
so it can be its own stand. It can be,
yep.
You can have it at any angle.
And so the screen is slightly thinner than a normal Surface because I think it's not got as powerful a chip in it. But the GPU and the laptop part of it means that when it's connected, it is a very powerful laptop. And if you take the screen
Such
off,
clever technology.
It's a really nice. And the other bit I liked was you press a button to detach it, and it's basically it's a cable, and it's holding it. And when you press the button, it puts a charge through it, so it becomes loose, and you can detach. You know, really, really nice engineering.
And as you say, it's using the keyboard aspect to store extra graphical processing. So the actual tablet itself can still be a bit more lightweight and goes down to it. You know, the technology involved to actually just switch between one and the other. Is
I had my usual debate with Shaq. Me and him go between, because I still love a laptop because I can't get the productivity out of the iPad because the iOS operating system, and I hate almost say it, it's still a bit of a kind of kiddie operating system. The apps are still slightly cut down versions or not. You have to really jump through hoops to be as productive. You can be productive, but not as productive as on a laptop. And this to me was, seeing instead of having to have both devices from Apple, this was it. This was like, I've got one device and I can, you know, so if I do want to take, you know, and go and read on a tablet, I can do it, you know, and rather than, because reading on a laptop just isn't as comfortable as reading on an iPad. Yeah. You know, and it's just like, this is it. I just thought, what a great product. If this ran El Capitan, I would buy it. It was just like, that looks fine. And fair enough, you need to wait for the reviews, and it's a demo, you know, it's a product release, so obviously they're going to oversell it, and it might be even the actual reviews are it's, you know, a clunker, you know, and there's some horrible flaws with it, but it looked fantastic.
But I don't think you should even write off the fact that it's a Windows operating system now. It's pretty irrelevant now anyway, and Windows 10, like I say, it's got some good reviews.
And it's operating system wise, I agree. I just think there's certain bits of software that I much prefer using on Mac than doing Windows.
I think most Windows, I've said it all along, Windows management in Mac is rubbish. Getting a bit better.
I know. And most of my week, I spend more time on Windows. You know, some that's not coming from me spending all my time. I'm probably more in Windows. And if I had my choice, I'd be Mac.
Fair enough. Argos.
Fair enough. your irrelevance.
Argos,
what a cock.
First company in the UK to kind of counter Amazon's same day delivery. Argos has said it's going to offer same day delivery across the UK. Certain products are going to be covered off first $20,000 of their product range, but basically they've got a flat fee of $3.95 to send same day, which is pretty bonkers. Certainly undercuts Amazon's 1 hour delivery services, which are only available in certain places. And they reckon they're the most uniquely set up to be able to do this.
It's a bold move, and I think it's what their owner has said is that we are becoming more a digital shop, you know, but less and less of our stores are for walking and browsing and doing the catalog ordering. It's more about their distribution hubs.
Yeah, they're just high street outlets, aren't they? Basic for a distribution hub. I hate to say it. I said it ages ago. Our high streets were going to turn into these shops that you could just see things, couldn't actually buy them, and you go and order online, and they pop out these outlets.
And more and more, even like walking around the big brick and mortar things like Marks, they've got catalogs there that you can go up to and do what you order this. You know, next here's our catalog. It's right. And you walk. Is it in Buchanan Galleries, I think, in Glasgow? The main entrance and the catalogue's there. You know, so you've got this whole store and the first thing they're saying is, we've got a catalogue.
Go away.
And it feels like that.
Do you just want the catalogue? Off you go.
There's obviously retail experts better than me, but it just seems like, is that the first thing you want to be saying to people?
Yeah. Adobe's come up with a new product. I should probably know what it's called.
Mix.
Adobe Fix.
Mix. Is it Fix.
Mix. Fix.
The Fix.
It's Adobe Fix. Sorry, it's Photoshop Fix. So basically, this is a free, we're on the ball. We are 43 minutes in already to a half hour podcast. Thanks. This is a cut down tool. They're offering it free, but it will deliver what most people end up using Photoshop for in a very simple, straightforward way, and it looks good. looks like can deal and alter photos in the ways that you'd want to. So
I have tried it.
Okay.
And it works. It works surprisingly well. So you can take a picture of a face and it'll detect the face and it'll offer things like, you know, you can see all that kind of retouching, moving people, making them thinner, fatter. You can fair enough, if you do it too exaggerated, you can tell straight away it's like somebody's audit. But see if you just do little subtle tweaks, it's like that looks like the person, but slightly fatter or slightly taller or slightly.
Could I make you look happy?
I always look happy. How dare you?
You're the only person here I could jolly back.
Can I make you look? No, I better not. I didn't know where to go for thin or tall, so I thought better not to say anything. Oh,
it's an interesting decision. They're trying to keep themselves relevant, I guess, because you know Photoshop's not for everyone. It's the a bit like you've just said though. It's a tool, right, and it lives on iPad. Effectively, or iOS, and how does that make you more productive? So you take a photo, I guess it allows you to manipulate that, but it's all a bit of a faff.
And well, at the same time, so one of the other ones that lots of people want to do, you take a photo and there's three people standing in front of it, you know, you're at some popular place and there's somebody there, and you do put the brush over it and it will remove them, and it does do a very good job. And I know you can just do that in Photoshop, but to have that free in a tool that is as easy as pick the tool and go with that.
I totally get it. I just don't. I mean, the extra sort of face things will appear on desktop. I just think even for this cut down version, it would be where your desktop will be more productive. I guess as long as it offers sensible ways to share.
Exactly. So the other one, Lightroom. Lightroom used to be only available as part of their photographer suite. You could download it, but you couldn't do anything. They've swapped that around and said, no, it's free as well. So you can download it, put Lightroom on, and it lets you do lots of things that the Lightroom desktop app does, and you can do it for free. And again, I was talking to Shaq about it today, and it was like, me and him have both bought new cameras, and you're not going to be out and about and wanting to do that. But if you're, I don't know, if you're in news, journalist, if you're, you know, making an advert, doing something, even if you just want to do some touch-ups, the option's there.
I just don't think they'd do it on an iOS device.
I tend to probably agree.
Okay, final story then. Light L6D. This got quite a lot of people's imagination this week, so it was shared around Facebook as well. It's a new camera design, and it's kind of a phone sort of esque shape, like an oblong, about just a bit bigger than a phone, a bit thicker than a phone. But on the front of this device, there are 16 cameras, and when you take photos using this device, it uses any number of those 16 cameras to take the best photo, basically. I think it can fire them all at once as well and combine them all in these kind of weird ways. So it means that you can have extremely good aperture levels on a wide range of different, if you're going back to the lens analogy, the sort of 35mm to 150mm, can zoom, it can take 4K video, and it all works with basically mini cameras that you can see them all arranged in a weird sort of format as well. It doesn't look like there's any kind of formula to it. It's just,
it looks mental. I mean, when you look, you see these, because when I first saw it, I'd seen a picture of the back of it, I hadn't seen the front, and they're talking about these 16 lenses, and I thought it would be
there would be some sort of formula to it, right?
And I guess there must be, because they're all different they're all different focal lengths and stuff, and doing different things. But it basically means you get, as you said, it's a smartphone-sized device, and you get something where you've got a zoom that's actually, you know, it works, unlike a digital zoom. And you can also do that focusing on later in the day. You know, so that Lytro camera, which was all about you could take a picture and then you can change the focal point, this will do it as well. And people are saying this is the future of photography. I'm not entirely convinced, because it's $1,300, which is a lot of money, and they're only going to make a few thousand of these, but the people that saw it said the images were impressive, but not as punchy as a Canon 5D Mark III, but that's a $3,000 camera, not including the lens. So it's kind of harsh to maybe compare it to, you know, you're comparing very, very high end to that.
The toughie is that you know, some people looked at this and said, yeah, that looks really, really good. Amazing. You can have this amazing quality in a quite a small package and you don't have to carry around under the lenses. But the fact is, the future is actually big cameras in phones at the moment, not having a separate device. There will be a market for a separate device of this size that gives you that flexibility without having to carry your stuff around. But nearly everyone who's, you know, would be in the market for this, they've bought their stuff already. And if they're going for this trip, they want to take their proper kit because you can still get better results from the bigger kit.
Yeah, agreed. I still, future cameras is, and we mentioned it before the podcast, is phones. You know, it's killed. Yeah. It's changed everything.
And the fact that we've got 4K video in cameras and the size of the megapixels. Maybe one day this kind of technology will be built into phones rather than.
Some people were saying that, you know, this shows where maybe 3 or 4 years' time, you know, miniaturization, or you start to accept the little bulges, you know, and that's a way of getting far better, you know, camera technology. But there was a demo through the week comparing the iPhone 6S, might have been the 6S Plus, with a high-end Nikon DSLR camera, and the 4K video out of the iPhone was, when you zoomed in, of better quality. And they didn't talk about the lens, they didn't talk about other things that could be changed, but you're still comparing, you know, something at $600-$700 to something far, far more.
So that's all our stories for this week. Ian, I see you got a pick for us, though.
I have a very quick pick, which might have been a pick before, but this is a new version, so I feel that I'm justified in doing it again. Overcast for iOS. It's a podcast player. So this is Overcast 2. It's from Marco Arment. It used to be Fortnite, so it's always been free, but to get smart speed and voice boost features. So smart speed intelligently speeds up the podcast without it sounding sped up.
Okay.
So you could, so out of an hour long podcast, it might only save 5 or 6 minutes. So it's not like that 1.5 speed where everybody sounds blah, 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 blah. It's actually doing it quite subtly and takes out gaps quite intelligently. So sometimes it just sounds a bit more compressed. But seeing you're listening to a 3-hour podcast and it tells you I've saved 25, 30 minutes, it's like thumbs up.
I think that's 25 minutes I have to gain back.
They used to be paid for, it's now free. The new version now supports streaming. So it used to be you had to download it before, which some people were really objected to. They wanted to be able just to stream it, and also chapter support. And I know lots of people don't do chapters. I still do, because I still like the fact that I still think somebody out there might be clicking on a button, because it's like, I don't want to listen to Ian talking about Apple anymore. And next, I want to hear Chris talking about something else. And the way the developers went is that he's went free. And it's a Patreon model. So he's basically saying...
Which is fine, other than last week we had the story on Patreon being hacked.
It's unfortunate timing.
The timing is not great.
But the Patreon model is basically give him like $12 a year. And what he's clearly saying is that doesn't buy you any features, but it just keeps me developing.
It's like the old website buy me a beer feature, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it's maybe the future of it, because I think if it's your
tip jar thing that you talked about 2 or 3 podcasts ago, it's exactly that.
Yeah, there you go. So Overcast 2 sounds like a good way to consume.
It's how I consume podcasts now. If you want to, there's no Mac client, but if you go to the website, you can do all. You can't do the smart speed and voice boost from the website, but it works fine.
I have to say, that's one thing. Since I moved away from iOS, podcasting, listening to regular podcasts has gone down. I'd say the number of podcasts that I listen to is a lot less now. And that's an interesting difference between iOS and... I mean, I still have access to them. I think I use Pocket Cast as my player of choice. But I'm now down to my sort of bare minimum number of podcasts, whereas I used to listen to quite a lot more.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I think it's also, I still find it a challenge to listen to all the ones I do subscribe to. I pick and choose more. Yeah. I've just not enough time.
No, they do take a lot of time. And actually having a clever speed up system is really quite a compelling thing.
It's really nice. I thought it would be very cheesy, but it works really well. Overcast 2.
Thank you. If you want to find out more about us, what we do, digitaloutbox.com. Email is info@digitaloutbox.com, and we're on Twitter as Digital Outbox as well. You can follow along with my racing, academyracer.co.uk. Got a race the next weekend, as it goes. And Cheesy UK is my Twitter account.
Oh, is that the
final race of the year?
Is that the last one?
Yeah.
Are you in the running for anything, or have you kind of is your engine stuff kind of stuffed you?
Way out.
Oh dear.
If I get top six, it'd be good. As in the championship. Where can we find you, Ian?
Blog is iand.net and Twitter is Sweeper.
Can't win them all. Speak to you probably in about 2 weeks, yeah. So 2 weeks is probably the next time we'll be on air. We'll speak to you then, and thanks for listening. Goodbye.